Almighty God, we humbly beseech thee to vouchsafe thy blessing upon this council, direct and prosper its deliberations to the advancement of thy glory and the welfare of the people whom we serve. Amen. Reconciliation Statement. Melbourne City Council acknowledges that land it now occupies has a history that began with the Indigenous occupants of Kulin Nation. Council pays its respect to the Kulin Nation people and their elders and descendants past and present. Please be seated.
Apologies from Councillor Ramsey and Councillor Borg, Mr. Mayor.
Changes to the order of business.
Sorry, Mr. Mayor.
It's all right. No worry.
I'd like to move a procedural motion that item 11.11 of the agenda, planning application PAP2091/97, application to amend planning permit P2091/97, expansion to existing landfill at 1100-11152 Christie's Road and 408/546 Hopkins Road, be considered as the first item in officers' reports.
Thank you, Councillor Medlick. Do you have a councillor to second that motion?
I'd like to second that, thank you.
All those in favour? I declare the motion carried. Item 11.11. I understand. Item number 4, deputations.
No, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Item number 5, declaration of any pecuniary interest, other interest, or conflict of interest of any councillor. No. Adoption and confirmation of minutes of previous meetings.
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to make move a recommendation that the minutes of the ordinary meeting of council held on the 29th of April 2014 be confirmed as a true and correct record.
Thank you, Councillor Medlock. Do I have a councillor to second the motion?
I'll second that. Thanks, Mr. Mayor.
Does any councillor oppose the motion? All those in favour? Declare the motion carried. Item number 7, parliamentarian and departmental letters, received by the Mayor. Member of Western Victoria, Gail Turney. I'll just read out the message from Gail Turney. I write to acknowledge the receipt of correspondence dated 16th of April 2014 regarding the provision of a school bus service to the Inverary Township. I wish to advise that I am making representation on your behalf to the relevant minister, and I have asked him to consider the response and respond to the issues you have raised. I will maintain an active role in the progress of this issue and will advise you of any development as it comes to hand. Thank you for taking the time to raise the very important issue with me. Please do not hesitate to contact my electoral office on 5224-2088 if I can be of any assistance with any other issue or concern that you may have. Yours sincerely, Gail Turney. I'd like to ask for someone to move the recommendation that the Parliament and the Permanent Letter be received by the Mayor, be received and noted.
I'll move it, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Cooley. Do we count it or second it?
Happy to second that, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Medlock. Does any councillor oppose the motion? I declare it carried. Item number 8, petitions and joint letters.
No, Mr. Mayor.
Item number 9.1, resumption of debate or other business carried over from a previous meeting. Notice of motion 376 Councillor Medlick.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'd like to move that at the next ordinary meeting of Council, number one, Council write to the new Minister for Local Government, the Honourable Tim Bull, MP, welcoming the Minister to his new role and present a case to reconsider the legislation around councillors abstaining from voting in chambers and to disallow councillors from practising abstaining in chambers through a change of legislation. Officers prepare a report to, dot point number two, officers prepare a report to Council of the councillors who have abstained from voting in the past and the agenda item to which they had abstained voting from. Item number three, that this report be presented at the next ordinary meeting of Council to both Council and also the report be forwarded to the Minister for Local Government to support that this Council is in favour of abolishing the practice of abstaining from voting within local government legislation. Mr. Mayor, I'd like to also make an amendment and include dot point number four and five, and that is to include that the motion include in the report the correspondence from Kendria Pope, the former Acting Executive Director of Local Government Victoria, entitled Voting by Councillors at Council Meeting, and that the report not include the officer's comments. And if this motion be put forward, Mr. Mayor, I'd like to make a few comments as well.
Thank you, Councillor Medlick. Do I have a seconder for the motion?
I'll second it, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Quigley-Ali. Does any councillor oppose the motion?
I oppose the motion, Mr. Mayor.
Very good, councillors. Now we enter into debate.
Mr. Mayor, before we enter into debate, I didn't actually have a chance to ask any questions. Is that possible? If I can still ask the questions from the officer who made comments on this, please.
I don't see any reason why not.
Thank you. My question through you, Mr. Mayor, has there been a councillor from this council who has abstained from a vote since this new legislation has come into operation?
I believe that is the case. The exact number of abstentions and to whom those abstentions came from, I couldn't tell you without notice, but I can confirm that abstention has indeed been voted.
Thank you. And is there a difference between abstaining from a motion or voting against a motion if a councillor is opposed or against a motion? So is there a difference between abstaining or being opposed to a motion?
Yes, there is. The first most obvious one is that a councillor fundamentally has three options during a vote. They can vote for a motion, they can vote against the motion, or due to changes within the Local Government Legislation Amendment Act, they may also abstain from a motion, so there's the definition difference. However, having said that, in effect, an abstention vote has the same material impact as a no vote. That is, when the Local Government Legislation Amendment Act was introduced, it also redevised the way the motion would be successfully carried. Trying to explain this as simply as possible, I apologise. Fundamentally, for a motion to be passed, it must have a majority of yes votes. An abstention in the chamber fundamentally acts to remove a vote, which means the threshold to create the number of yes votes is made more difficult. So, in essence, an abstention acts as a no vote.
And would that be fair to say that this is purely logistical, not in regards to the terminology?
You could make that argument that it's a matter of semantics, given the actual material impact of an abstention is the same as a no vote. Having said that, proponents of abstention would also argue that given the difference in definition and in wording, an abstention may be seen to mean something different from a no vote or an against vote.
There was actually some confusion, Mr. Mayor, around this legislation when it was implemented by the state government in 2012. May I just read an excerpt from the letter from Kendria Pope, who was the Acting Executive Director of Local Government Victoria. She was actually trying to clear up any concerns by councils regarding abstaining from voting. And I do actually have a question after I read the letter. The letter basically reads, concerns have been raised that the absence of a statutory obligation for councillors to vote invites individuals to deliberately abstain from participating in important decisions. This is not the case. Councillors, when elected, take an oath of office affirming they will carry out the duties of their position in the best interests of their communities and will faithfully and impartially carry out the powers, functions, authorities and discretions vested in them to the best of their skill and judgment. While no penalties apply where a councillor chooses to abstain from voting, the decision to do so should not be taken lightly. Not participating in decisions taken by council is an abrogation of council's responsibility to represent the community. Abstentions also serve to undermine the role of councils in providing governance and leadership through effective decision making. Can I just reread the last paragraph, Mr. Mayor, because this is a strong point that I'd like to make.
While no Labor, Councillor.
There is a question after this, okay. Trust me. While no penalties apply where a councillor chooses to abstain from voting, the decision to do so should not be taken lightly. Not participating in decisions taken by council is an abrogation or a decision to remove themselves of a councillor's responsibility to represent the community. Abstentions also undermine the role of councillors in providing governance and leadership through effective decision making. It says here clearly, Mr. Mayor, that abstaining does not allow councillors a greater choice for councillors in their decision making. In fact, it states that it undermines the role of councillors in providing governance and leadership through effective decision making. My question to the author of this report is, if there is a warning attached to councillors if they choose to abstain from a vote and that it should not be taken lightly, why would the comment by the author of this report be made that the commonly understood definition of abstain does not apply when clearly this is not true?
Mr. Hogan.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. If I may quote, in this, the commonly understood definition of abstain, so what's publicly recognised, to remove oneself from a decision does not imply simply because there is a consequential impact to one's decision within chamber to apply an abstaining vote. So what I mean by that is typically if the commonly understood meaning of abstention, as we use it in everyday life, is that I will remove myself from impacting or making a decision or having a bearing upon any decision. As it's written within the Local Government Act currently, the decision within chamber by a councillor to exercise a vote to abstain has a real and material impact. So while they may wish to demonstrate that they wish to remove themselves from a decision, the impact itself actually is a very real one, which was the point I was labouring to make.
Sorry, Mr. Mayor, I do have a few other questions. In the last paragraph, the author of this report states that it would be considered extremely unlikely that despite advocacy or representation seeking removal, the state government would move again to change the act to remove the right to cast a vote to abstain. This opinion simply is an officer's opinion. It is very disappointing, Mr. Mayor, should council now take a defeated approach to any advocacy issues it feels strongly about, because it doubts that anything will change. Is the officer aware that in early 2013, the Shadow Minister, the Honourable Richard Wynne, was presenting to mayors from all of Victoria, I was included in that meeting, Mr. Mayor, about this very topic about abstaining that came up within the discussion? Mr. Richard Wynne indicated that should his party be elected into government, he will make it his duty to abolish the choice of councillors to abstain. Was the author of this report aware of that?
No, I was not aware that the opposition had made such a statement.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Miller. We enter into debate.
Yes. Sorry, Mr. Mayor, before we enter into debate, I also have two questions that I would like to answer before I give my reasons of why I oppose Councillor Malik's motion. And I'm sure Councillor Malik won't mind answering this. Councillor Malik, this legislation was introduced in 2012. Why have you waited so long to lobby the state government, which it's this current state government that introduced this legislation, why have you waited so long since 2012?
Thank you, Councillor Carley, for that question. The reason why I've waited so long, Mr. Mayor, I was actually invited to be participant in a local government mayor and minister forum in 2012, which I gratefully accepted, with the former local government minister, Jeanette Powell. And this discussion actually did come up several times, and the concerns of the mayors that councillors were actually abusing this right to abstain. And she had actually mentioned that let's leave it for a while, and this isn't in quotation marks, but this is along the lines of what she was saying. Let's leave it for a while and see, and please report back to me over the course of the year or so if there are issues that come up within your council. Now, as we know, the Honourable Jeanette Powell has actually stepped down from her role, so the new Minister of Government has actually stepped into that role. So I think it's quite timely that I bring this situation up, because obviously Jeanette Powell has stepped down from the situation, and she had actually asked for councillors within the year or so, which is around about this time, to just see if councillors would in fact abuse this abstention. And in my opinion, Mr. Mayor, it has been abused in this council. So I hope that answers your question, Councillor Carley.
Councillor Carley, do you have a second question? You said.
I did, Mr. Mayor, but Councillor Madlick has asked it. My second question was, when she sat on the Ministerial Advisory Panel for 2012-2013 with the former local government minister, Jeanette Powell, did you personally raise your concerns, Councillor Madlick? Because I've actually looked online and I've seen what was discussed during those ministerial advisory panel meetings, and there was a brief outline, and nowhere did it say that abstaining to vote was mentioned.
Absolutely, Mr. Mayor, that I did bring this up. Several mayors actually did. It wasn't on the agenda item, and I'm not sure why it wasn't put on the agenda item, but it was an informal discussion, and I certainly did raise that personally with the local government, ex-local government minister, Jeanette Powell. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Medley. We now go into debate. Councillor Medley, you have first.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. There is obviously a clear distinct distinction between abstaining from a vote and being opposed from a vote. Any intelligent person here would agree with me that when a councillor decides to abstain, it is the same as cowardly walking away from your duties as a councillor. Anyone would agree with me here that when a councillor abstains, it is the same as taking away the vote of the community members who have elected us into this council in the first place. During the elections, Mr. Mayor, in 2012, there were over 70 people wanting to be a councillor in this council. I got to read many brochures and many pamphlets about what each candidate would like to achieve once they were elected into council. Nowhere, Mr. Mayor, nowhere did I ever remember reading from a candidate that if they get elected into council, they will abstain from voting, that they will not voice the opinions of the people who elected them. Nowhere did I read that. And yet we find ourselves in this chamber tonight with councillors who now feel it's okay to waste their vote. This is just a slap in the face for the community members. It is an absolute disgrace and a shame that councillors in this very council feel it's okay to undermine the role of this council and their duties as a councillor. I strongly believe that this legislation should be abolished. It is being abused in this council at the moment by a few councillors, and this is not right. It's not fair for the community, and at the very least, I hope the new Minister for Local Government should at least review it and put some clearly defined boundaries around it. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Councillor Carley, you may speak to the motion.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you, Councillor Madlick, for your view on abstaining and entertaining me. I oppose this motion as I believe it is a personal attack on me, because I sought clarification and transparency on expenses claimed by certain councillors. And we all know that councillors' expenses are pretty concerning. The changes to the legislation of the Local Government Act gives any councillor the right to abstain on any vote. It should never be seen as a cop-out by the councillor, nor should it be interpreted that the elected councillor is abandoning the aspirations of their community. When and if an issue is brought before me requiring a vote, I will deal with it in the best way I can. It is necessary on this issue that all councillors abide by the law and cease to grandstand and gain cheap political points. If some of these councillors wish to change this law, they have the right to lobby the state government. And if they are unsuccessful and it means so much to them, then my advice would be run for Parliament. And Councillor Maley, we all know that you've actually run for Parliament and the good people of Corroy rejected you.
Councillor Quigliari, do you wish to speak to the motion?
I reserve my right to speak.
Mr Antonio, please be quiet. I don't want to... Yes. You're causing disruption. I'm not going to ask you again, please. Councillor Quigliari, I didn't hear what you said. I'm sorry.
I reserve my right to speak.
Does any other councillor wish to speak against the motion? Does any other councillor wish to speak? Councillor Maitlick.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm really confused as to the comments that Councillor Carley has made. I'm really surprised. I'm not aware of any of her questions or any. I'm not sure why she's brought up councillor expenses. Sorry, Councillor Carley, this is my turn to speak. You've had your chance. I understand that Councillor Carley feels quite upset. It's obvious that she is, and rightly so, Mr. Mayor. I mean, abstaining from a vote is taking away from her duties as a councillor. But regardless, Mr. Mayor, I'm not quite sure where her anger is coming from. But I wasn't making this personal, Mr. Mayor. I was certainly
point
not...
Point of order, Mr. Mayor. I'm not angry. I simply stated my point.
Sorry, Councillor Carley. This is
and
my
I'm
turn
saying
to
point
speak.
Of order, Councillor Maitley.
Councillors, please. Councillor Maitley, carry on.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. And to the Chamber Gallery members, if you want your councillors that you've obviously elected, if you want them to refrain from making a vote, well, then by all means clap and cheer. But I thought my residents actually wanted me to speak on their behalf. So, Mr. Mayor, in regards to this, I'm quite disappointed and just surprised at Councillor Carley's comments that she made. But to stick to the point, Mr. Mayor, I really do believe that this is a strong point that this council should actually should lobby the state government to at least change or make better provisions in regards to abstaining from voting and putting back the community voice into our councillors. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Maitlick. Thank you, Councillor Carley. The debate is now closed. All councillors in favour of the motion, please raise your hands. All those against the motion, please raise your hands.
I call for a division, Mr. Mayor.
All those in favour of the motion, Councillor Maitlick, Councillor Quigliari, Councillor Dunn, Councillor Turner. Those against the motion, Councillor Quigliari. Councillor Carley, sorry. I declare the division carried. We move on. Agenda item 9.2, notice of motion 382. Councillor Maitlick, election commitment.
Thank you. I move a motion that this council write to all endorsed candidates for the seats of Melton, Corroyt and Keilor at the November state election, seeking their advice on what their party's commitment are to delivering on identified needs in the city of Melton should they win government at the next election.
Thank you, Councillor Maitlick. Do I have a councillor to move the motion? To second the motion? Sorry.
I'll second it, Mr. Mayor.
Councillor Quigliari. Does any councillor oppose the motion?
Mr. Mayor, I don't oppose the motion, but I'm just going to suggest some few changes, if I may.
If the mover of the motion is happy for you to change them, but we'll carry on.
I'd like to first hear what the changes are, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Councillor Maitlick, where you say endorsed candidates, well, when you're running as an independent, and you should know more than anyone, you're not endorsed by anyone. So I believe that endorsed should be removed. And could you please explain to me the seat of Keir Law? That doesn't exist anymore. So what seat were you referring to? Was it the Sydenham seat?
Mr. Mayor, there was some confusion in regards to when I wrote this, and I did seek clarification from the officers, and they weren't sure which one to put in, so that's where the clarification comes from. But it is the former seat of Keir Law, and I'm not quite sure why Councillor Carley keeps mentioning my running for Parliament, because I'm certainly not. In regards to the endorsed candidates, well, so far, and she should know better than anyone else, unless somebody has actually been endorsed, we don't know of the unendorsed candidates, so there could be who knows how many, but obviously the endorsed candidates are the ones that have made themselves public, so we can't exactly ask somebody that hasn't made themselves public to running for state government to make a comment on this if nobody knows if they're running yet or not. If there is an independent that has put their name down and we are aware of that, then I think they should be included in this as well.
And the other change, thank you, Mr. Mayor. The other change, I'm just a bit confused of why Councillor Malik only mentioned the lower house seats, Melton, Corroy, and which is going to be Sydenham. What about the Western Metropolitan upper house seats, where we have Andrew Ellsbury, Khalil Eady, Caesar Milan, Melham, Bernie Finn, and Colleen Hartland? Shouldn't they be included in this motion?
Well, they could be included, Mr. Mayor, but I chose not to include them. So unless Councillor Carley has another motion that she would like to put up, that's fine, but I'd like to remain as it is. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Motion as is.
No, definitely not.
Councillor
Carley.
That seems really strange, because it's like Councillor Madlick's only chosen the seat of Melton, Corroyd and Sydenham, which are Labor Party seats. However, she hasn't chosen the Liberal or the Greens. I would be interested to see... make all-inclusive members of Parliament, don't you agree?
Mr. Mayor, my intent actually was to include everyone. I did advise and seek... I did seek clarification from one of the officers in regards to this, and when I stated this motion, I actually did assume that all of those upper and the lower house members be included. I don't have an issue with the Greens or the Liberals or the Independents or the Labor Party members. I'm basically just more concerned about what they promise that they'll deliver as opposed to what they will deliver once they're elected. So I don't have an issue with changing that, Mr. Mayor. But I won't change the endorsed candidate, because as by other statement was, if we don't know who is actually put their names down, we can't actually ask the person's name. So unless Councillor Carley has another way of predetermining who is actually going to put their names down for state government, I'd like to, if she's got any recommendations, that's fine.
Can I ask you a question, Councillor Medley? You're basically meaning by this motion that any seat that is connected within the City of Melton, any seat that is represented within the City of Melton.
Absolutely, and that was the intent. I do apologise if it doesn't read that way. The intent was to have every candidate endorsed, so known candidates at this point, because obviously we can't ask for unknown members or people that are running. Every endorsed candidate, both upper and lower, that affect this whole region, be accountable to this. If they choose, I mean, they might turn around and say, no, we don't want to share that, but that's up to them. This is giving them the opportunity of advocating what they would do if they get elected.
Councillor Carter, you still wish it to be all candidates, not just endorsed?
I would like to see it, Mr. Mayor, as all candidates. I don't like to see it endorsed. I can appreciate this motion, but I would like to see it inclusive of all candidates. However, I do feel that this motion is a little bit premature. Like Councillor Malik herself said, we don't know who is going to be endorsed. We only know the endorsed candidates of the Labor Party. We don't know if the Palmer Party or, you know, whichever other party is out there is going to run candidates. So I do feel it's a bit premature. However, I can appreciate this motion, but I would like to see it inclusive of all candidates.
Not just endorsed. Way forward. Mr. Bean?
So, Mr. Mayor, could I just have clarification in regards to Councillor Carley's wording on this? Because that was a lot of sentences, and I would rather see that on exactly the wording that she intends.
Councillor Carley, are you happy for Councillor Medlick to change the wording to include all candidates?
Yes, I am.
In her motion.
It's very simple. All I want removed is endorsed, so it reads that Council write to all candidates for the seats of Melton, Coleroyd and Keilor. If that's the way that Councillor Medlick is saying that it's inclusive of everyone, I mean, she wrote this motion, so you know, I can only take her word for it, but I do want to see the word endorsed removed.
Councillor Medlick.
Mr. Mayor, I don't have an issue with that, and I would probably then include as well as the upper and lower house seats, whichever they pertain to, because I don't know the exact... thank you, Mr. Bean.
Mr. Bean.
If I may suggest a way forward, Mr. Mayor, could I suggest that the motion be read that Council write to all candidates for all upper and lower houses seats within the City of Melton at the November state election, seeking their advice on their party's commitments are to delivering on identified needs in the City of Melton should they win government at the next election.
Councillor Medlick, are you happy to accept that as your amended
I am happy
motion.
To accept that, Mr. Mayor, and if it does go through, if I could have a few words on it, please, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Do I have a councillor to second the motion?
I'll second it, Mr. Mayor.
Councillor Medlick. Does any councillor oppose the motion? All those in favour of the motion? I declare it carried. Councillor Medlick, you've got 1 minute.
Mr. Mayor, can I just call for a division, please, Mr. Mayor?
Certainly. Call for a division. All those in favour of the motion? Councillor Turner, Councillor Medlick, Councillor Cugliari, Councillor Dunn and Councillor Carley.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. And the reason why I ask for a division is that then it's written down as proof. Otherwise, it's not.
I declare the division carried.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I think it's timely that our residents know and receive some sort of commitment from our endorsed candidates, in particular what they will deliver and how they will support the residents in this municipality. As most of you have all heard that we have been promised the Caroline Springs train station, that's great news. We were promised this by the previously elected state government and it was never delivered. Our community has been neglected. We are a fast-growing community and need more primary schools, more secondary schools, more schools for children with disabilities. We need train stations, electrification to railway, a 24-hour police station in Caroline Springs. We've heard from the shadow leader, Daniel Andrews.
Councillor Medlick, your minute's up.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. That he's promised is to make sure that council rates are capped.
Councillor Medlick, your minute's up. Please sit down.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Item number 10, public question time. Mr. Bean.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We have a number of questions this evening. The first one is from Linda Duck. Is Linda in the gallery this evening? No. Oh, sorry, Linda. Okay, thanks, Linda. The question is, what justification does council or councillors have to introduce a new fee of $200 for street traders or roadside traders? This would surely impinge on a proud community growing together and deter encouragement of bringing business and jobs into the Melton municipality, would it not? I'll refer this question to the Acting General Manager Corporate Services, Mr. Daniel Hogan, to respond.
Thank you very much. Thank you for your question, Linda. The proposed introduction of a new permit type and fee to specifically address roadside trading is intended, and this is the justification, to accurately reflect the risks, controls and costs associated with this potentially extremely dangerous activity. Currently, roadside trading is managed under a catch-all local law permit, so by drawing a distinction between pavement trading and roadside trading, council can better cover the costs of managing this significantly higher risks to traders, customers and motorists in relation to roadside trading. Mitigating these risks is a far larger and more expensive administrative task once you take into account application handling, site inspection, traffic management plans, signage, issuing of permits and importantly enforcement. Certainly I understand your concerns around suppressing local economic activity. However, we believe we have struck a balance between reasonable costs and the ability of roadside trading community to absorb the increase in this annual charge without a dampening effect on this important sector of our local community. As this fee is included within the current budget process. It is currently merely proposed. I would encourage you to take advantage of the Section 223 budget process, which is still open until Wednesday, and to enter a budget submission. Thank you. Through you, Mr. Mayor. Fundamentally, given the fact that roadside trading happens at the site of freeways, we know that the site must be appropriate for that particular usage. We need to be sure of traffic management, so people looking to pull over to take advantage of those roadside traders don't necessarily need to do a U-turn across traffic, pedestrian traffic, so on and so forth. So in terms of really the cost better reflects the administrative cost of those safety measures, just to ensure that both the customers, the traders themselves, and also passing traffic, remain safe. No, it's not a public liability payment.
Mr. Bean.
Next two questions from Mr. Alan Fairweather, and I can see Alan in the gallery there. Will council change their procedures and have better lighting installed before they modify intersections? The marking out of changes to Currajang Drive and Nemo were on the road for over 1 month before the changes were made, and I have had 5 cars suddenly break in front of me at night because either they didn't know of the changes or could not see them due to lack of illumination. I'll refer this question to the General Manager, Planning and Development, Mr. Luke Shannon.
Thank you, Mr. Fairweather, for your question. The issue of lighting, particularly at intersections, is a very important one that Council does consider when it's undertaking changes to how traffic's controlled at those locations. I'll need to take the specifics of this particular intersection on notice. We'll review what happened in that situation and I'll provide you further advice regarding how that might be done better into the future and what might be done to make any changes at this intersection in the meantime. Thank you.
The next question from Mr. Fairweather in regard to item 11.14 on tonight's agenda, Melton Housing Diversity Strategy. As one of the objectors to part of this strategy, who has never had an answer or reply to my objection on the change of low-density residential zone to neighbourhood residential zone, I would like to know how the council can vote on this without allowing people to take their objection further. I refer this matter to the General Manager of Planning and Development.
Again, thank you, Mr. Fairweather, for your question. I'm aware that you have had a number of discussions, particularly with council officers, regarding the specific issues of concern, and certainly we've briefed the council on the overall strategy, which is a subject to a item later in the agenda. As I understand the specific concern, not only of yourself, but of residents in the immediate area, you were particularly concerned regarding the potential change in subdivision provisions that might apply to the current low-density residential zone. The officers have reviewed both your verbal submission, written submission and submissions from other residents and have recommended to council tonight that a schedule be introduced to the neighbourhood residential zone. What that means in plain English is that the subdivision provisions that currently apply to your land and the wider land will continue to remain unchanged through that schedule. We will write to you and detail how that will take effect, and I'm happy to talk to you tonight to provide you further particulars if needed after the meeting. Thank you.
Next question is from Mr. Yanni Van Lempen. I see Yanni standing at the doorway there. I've heard that residents of Aintree pay body corporate fees as well as council rates. Who do these residents pay these body corporate fees to, and is council involved in the collection of these fees in any way? I'll again refer this question to our General Manager, Planning and Development.
Thank you, Mr. Van Lempen. It is true that the Aintree development does have a body corporate in place, and that's a similar arrangement to particularly many unit developments which have body corporates in place as well. Council has no role in the establishment of a body corporate. That was done by the original developer, and as each new owner buys into the estate, they become a member of the body corporate. The body corporate is, in essence, the collection of all owners. They set the annual fee to the owner, they collect it, and then they expend it for the benefit of the residents within the estate. Thank you. No.
Next question is from Mrs. Joan Duckham. Is Joan in the gallery? Okay, thanks, Joan. This question is in two parts, but I'll read it out in totality. Are all ratepayers living in retirement villages pensioners? As stated in the draft budget for 2014-2015, Mountain Council declares that rate payers pertaining to be in retirement village differential rate do not access other community services normally available to the wider Melton residents and should not be rated as the general rate differential. How does this council know that the other community services are not accessed by ratepayers living in retirement villages? I refer this question to our Acting General Manager, Corporate Services.
Yep, that's on. Thanks very much for your question, Joan. In response to your first question, are all ratepayers living in retirement villages pensioners? Not quite. Of the 560 properties rated under the retirement village differential, 463 have applied and received a pension concession in this financial year. So it's not quite, but it's close. To your second question, how does council know that other community services are not indeed accessed by ratepayers living in retirement villages? I do apologise for any confusion. Council does not contend that residents of aged care facilities do not avail themselves to council services or facilities, merely that a number of costs are in fact not borne by council of those residents. So services provided by retirement villages themselves include road maintenance, footpath maintenance, lighting repairs within villages, home help, bus hire, social activities and other services which are normally provided by council's aged and disability services. So I apologise for the confusion, but therein lies the distinction.
Next question is from Michelle Mendez. Michelle. Are council prepared to write to the Premier and Minister for Education stating the urgent need for a 10 to 12 school in the Taylors Hill, Caroline Springs area? I refer this question to our General Manager of Community Services, Mr Murray Heaney.
Thank you, Michelle, and a very worthy question at that. Council officers are already in conversations with the state government, i.e. the Department of Education and Early Childhood Development, on school provision and potential future land purchases within the city. Council will be briefed shortly on the advocacy strategy, which will have a high priority on school provision right throughout the city. In the meantime, officers will write to the relevant minister outlining council's concerns, and I do note the shortfall in the state government budget papers on that. Thank you, Michelle.
Next question is from Andrula Tavana, and I see Andrula in the gallery. Given the public opposition to the Borrell landfill expansion application, if councillors choose to represent the will of the community and refuse the application, it is inevitable that Borrell will push the matter through the legal system to oppose the councillor's decision. Please disclose who will fund Melton City Council's legal costs and how the legal costs will be paid for. I refer this matter to Council's General Manager, Planning and Development.
Thank you, Mr Tuvana. This is an issue that's obviously subject to an item later in the Council agenda. In the event that Council does indeed refuse the planning permit application, then the permit applicant is entitled under state government law to appeal to what's known as the Victorian Civil and Administrative Tribunal, or what most people would know as VCAT. They may choose to do that, they may not choose to do that. That's entirely in their hands, but that will ultimately depend on the outcome of tonight's decision. In the event that Council were to refuse the application and the applicant took the matter to VCAT, Council would be represented at VCAT, as you would expect. Council would naturally vigorously defend its position, whatever that may be. And as with all VCAT cases, that is funded by Council, Council's representation, that is. Thank you, Mr Mayor. Through Mr Mayor, in essence, that is correct. I've just answered the question, I think, Mr Mayor. Thank you.
Next question is from Gary Thomas. Is Gary in the gallery? Hi, Gary. I wish to place an idea to Council for consideration. I've spoken to Councillor Brodenborg, and I'm also putting my name forward to do this part-time position. I propose that I become employed by the Council to perform the duties of a parking officer to take care of the parking problems faced at our schools. This position would rotate between the schools in Melton, example, day one Coburn Primary, day two Staunton College, and so forth, going around all the schools in Melton. Never going to the same school on the same day, so they don't get to know a routine. This could operate from about 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. and 3 p.m. to 4 p.m. Monday to Friday. This also frees up your full-time inspectors from normal duties. I refer this question to our Acting General Manager, Corporate Services, Mr Hogan.
Thank you very much for your question. I'll get the hang of this. Thank you very much for your question. If I may, I might just break that into two sections, the first being around the selection process for new employees the council goes through. All positions at Melton City Council must be publicly advertised, and appointments are based on merit through a competitive process, so interviews undertaken, preferred applicants to complete pre-employment checks, and terms and conditions of employment need to be entered into as per our Enterprise Agreement Part 13. It's a novel approach to an application, but unfortunately not something that's being able to be further entertained. I should point out, as a second part, and I think your greater point, is around the crossing safety around schools, primary and secondary schools, and we're given assurances by our compliance manager that they are indeed monitored by our local laws officers, and that is done on every single school day, and that's done on a random basis, as you have suggested, is appropriate. So at the moment, Council believes that it's adequately providing for that service. Thank you for your application.
Thank you, Mr. Hogan.
Next question is from Valerian De Souza. Is Valerian in the... Hi, how are you? This question's in two parts. Mr. De Souza is requesting an update in relation to the Westwood Drive Bridge and road construction on Corroy Creek. He's aware of the State Government's notice from the AAV. But what is Council's approach to resolving this, and when will this project recommence? And secondly, in regards to the Burnside Heights Sports Pavilion and Youth Activity Node, where the basketball ring is facing right in the direction of the sun's orientation, making it impossible for kids to play basketball until late evening, and also without any lighting in the area, even playing late in the evenings as possible, he would appreciate if Council could relocate the basketball ring to the opposite end of its present location. I'll ask the General Manager of Planning and Development, Mr. Shannon, to respond to this matter.
Thank you for your question, Mr. De Souza. Firstly, in terms of the Westwood Drive Bridge and the Westwood Drive Corridor, Council is acutely aware of how important that road link is for the municipality and for residents generally in the western region of Melbourne, because it will ultimately provide a road connection between the Calder Freeway and the Princess Freeway, and it will be six traffic lanes wide, so it will be a significant road that will relieve pressure, particularly on Caroline Springs Boulevard. You'll be aware that Council actually commissioned works on that bridge some 18 to 24 months ago. Regrettably, as you identify in your question, Aboriginal Affairs Victoria, which are a state government agency, required Council to cease works due to what they identified as being cultural sensitivities on the Corroy Creek that they felt hadn't been fully addressed, which, by the way, wasn't a view that Council necessarily shared. However, we did cease works and effectively cancelled the contract. Unfortunately, what that has meant is the bridge would have otherwise been completed by now. Clearly, that's not the case. Council has subsequently engaged with Vic Roads, who are doing what's known as an environmental effects statement along the full corridor length of what they call the Palmer's Road Corridor, which is really the Westwood Drive Corridor. So they will incorporate any necessary Aboriginal Affairs, Victoria and other agency approvals through their environmental effects statement. Once that's completed, Council will then be in a position to reinitiate works at that location. Regrettably, that will take time. I would anticipate it could be 18 months to 24 months before that approval will be finalised. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. And in relation to the second question, I will take the issue on notice in terms of the basketball rink location, and will certainly endeavour to make any improvements to make it more usable. We will provide further advice to you about how we might achieve that, but thanks for raising it.
Thank you, Mr. Shane.
Through Mr. Mayor, we'll review the lighting situation as well at the same time, and we'll provide you further advice about what improvements we might be able to make.
Thanks, Mr. De Souza. Next question from Mr. Nathan Miles. I see Nathan there. Hi, Nathan. Just regarding agenda item 11.11, planning application Borrell landfill expansion. If councils follow the recommendations as outlined in tonight's agenda and reject this application, will council strongly fight and legally defend their decision in court should Borrell take the matter to VCAT or the Supreme Court? I'll refer this matter to our General Manager of Planning and Development, Mr. Shannon.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, I've largely answered this question through an earlier question. What I can say or reiterate is that whatever Council's decision tonight, should the matter go to VCAT, as with all matters at VCAT, a strong representation will be made supporting whatever Council's decision is at any future VCAT case, should that arise. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Shannon.
The next two questions are from Mr. David O'Connor. David's in the gallery. The first question is, does Council provide any direct notification to major stakeholders with respect to draft documents on exhibition? For example, was Melbourne Airport made aware of the recent draft Western Plains North Green Wedge Management Plan? I'll refer this question to our General Manager of Planning and Development, Mr. Shannon.
Thank you, Mr. O'Connor, for your question. Yes, we have engaged quite widely with the Green Wedge Management Plan, and we've had a number of forums over a period engaging with various agencies and community representatives. We have in fact received a written submission from the Melbourne Airport, and we'll consider that along with all other community submissions in determining how to best proceed with that strategy. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
The second question, Mr. Mayor, from David O'Connor reads, at the March Ordinary Meeting of Council, planning application PA2008-2070 was deferred for a period of 3 months pending discussions with the property owners. Would Council please provide an update to those discussions? I once again, and for the last time this evening, refer a matter to the General Manager of Planning and Development, Mr. Shannon.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Again, thank you, David, for your question. This issue obviously relates to the proposed or the permit application for the demolition of the remains of the Diggers Rest Hotel. You'll recall that in March, Council deferred the application to enable more detailed discussions with the permit applicant and the landholders, of which there are a number. We have had a number of telephone conversations with the main owner of the property. Clearly, we need to meet with him, and we've sought to do so. That's proving a little bit difficult. However, he has expressed his strong desire to do so. I would expect that will happen in the next short period. And in any event, in accordance with Council's resolution, there will be a report to the June Ordinary Meeting of Council on this issue. Thank you.
Mr. Mayor, I've got one final question from Mr. Miles, and it is, can Council please confirm how a member of the public is able to access the legal register of councillors' interests? Can Council please provide a copy of this document? I'll further the final question to the Acting General Manager Corporate Services, Mr. Hogan.
Thank you very much for your question. Nathan, under Section 81 of the Local Government Act, a member of the public may make written application to the Chief Executive Officer of a Council to review the Register of Interest for Councillors. I have printed off a form for you for such purposes, and if you'd like to collect it after the meeting, I'd be only happy to hand that on. I think the best way forward is just to fill in the application, make an appointment with our governance team, and we'll gladly make the register available for your inspection during standard business hours.
Thank you, Mr. Hogan. That concludes the public questions, Mr. Mayor.
Excellent. We move on to staff reports.
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to move in block 11.1, 11.2, 11.3, 11.4, 11.5, 11.10, 11.12, 11.13 and 11.17 and accept all officers' recommendations as put.
Thank you, Councillor Millick. Do I have a seconder for the motion?
I'll second it, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Cooley-Allen. Does any councillor oppose the motion? I declare the motion carried.
Mr. Mayor, Council resolved in a procedural motion at the start of the meeting to consider item 11.11 as its first item of correspondence or item of business in the officers' reports.
Thank you, Mr. Bean. Item number 11.11, planning application PA2091/97, application to amend planning permit T091/97. Expansion to existing landfill at 1100 to 1152 Christie's Road and 408-546 Hopkins Road, Ravenhall. Mr. Baggio.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The site, which accommodates the Boral Quarry and landfill, comprises a number of land parcels with a total area of over 1,000 hectares. The land is bounded by Hopkins Road, the Ballarat Railway Line, Christie's Road and Middle Road to the south. The existing quarry on the site extracts basalt for use in the construction industry, and existing permits allowing quarrying across the whole of the site have been approved, but at this stage the quarrying operation is confined just to the southern part of the site. In fact, the first stages of the quarry have already been filled by the existing landfill on the site. The existing landfill is located in the southeast corner of the site and is a major commercial facility which receives waste from most parts of Melbourne. It does not currently accept waste from the general public, but instead takes waste from commercial operators, municipalities and the like. Further, the landfill also collects biogas from completed cells and converts this into renewable energy, which currently serves the energy needs of about 4,000 dwellings. The site has been located within the urban growth boundary since 2010. The surrounding area is essentially earmarked for future industrial development. However, a recent precinct structure plan has been commenced in the Mount Atkinson area, which is west of Hopkins Road, which is likely to include a mix of industrial and residential development. So the application's been made to expand the existing landfill to match the approved area of the quarry, essentially across the majority of the site. The proposed expansion would be completely contained within the future quarry area. Advice from the applicant indicates that the proposed landfill is to be progressively capped in stages as each stage is completed. At its highest point, the landfill would reach 40 to 45 metres above the existing surface level in the southern part of the land and 55 metres on the northern side of the site. In relation to notification of the application, Council received about 7,000 written objections to the proposal. The majority of these objections were received on a pro forma letter. However, objections were also received from a number of adjoining and abutting landowners. Marlene Carews, MP, the member for Corroit, and also the City of Brimbank. The grounds of objection can basically be summarised as follows: that the material, the technical reports supporting the application are inadequate and fail to take into account the context of the site. The expansion is considered to be excessive and should be reduced in size to enable future expansion to be considered in stages. That the proposal represents an attempt to generate and bank airspace without any analysis of need or environmental impact. The proposal fails to achieve internal buffers and therefore fails to satisfy current EPA best practice. And that the landfill is currently approved, has more than 10 years airspace available, and that there's therefore no need for an expansion of the existing landfill at this time. Further, concerns about the proposal have also been raised by the Metropolitan Waste Management Group, the Environment Protection Authority, and the Metropolitan Planning Authority, essentially relating to the proposed, I suppose, longevity of the permit, scale of the permit, and the adequacy of the buffers being proposed on the site. So, at a state strategic level, the Boral site is recognised as being one of four major resource recovery and disposal sites in the metropolitan area that are planned to meet Melbourne's current and long-term landfill needs. In this context, is the proposal before Council to expand the landfill operation across the entire site into large tracts of land which have yet to be quarried, and in effect locking in planning approval to fill the site for an indeterminate time frame, which could be up to 100 years or more. Coupled with this is uncertainty about the extent of buffers which would be required from existing and proposed sensitive uses and possible adverse effects on the surrounding area. Council therefore needs to decide whether from a planning perspective the broad strategic objectives of securing the Boral site as a long-term facility for Melbourne's putrescible waste outweighs concerns relating to the amenity of the surrounding area and the evolution of best practice standards over time, which would be better served by a more staged planning approval process. In essence, it's considered by officers that while the planning scheme and other strategic documents should recognise the Boral site of being of metropolitan significance in terms of future waste management, any planning approvals should be considered more on a stage basis, consistent with the staging of the quarrying operations. A granting of approval now for airspace that may not be created within a foreseeable planning period is considered to potentially undermine the orderly planning of the area. It's also considered by officers that a more staged development of the landfill would help to ensure that Council is able to properly consider amenity impacts based on the development of the surrounding area at the time, best practice principles as they evolve over time, an assessment of the environmental performance of previous stages and the application of new technology and management practices that become available. Mr. Mayor, it's therefore recommended that Council refuse the application as per the recommendation in the report. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Baggio. Does any Councillor require any further clarification?
Yes, Mr. Mayor.
Councillor Midlett.
I do have a few questions, Mr. Mayor, in regards to this significant application.
Hold on. Please, guys. On you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. You mentioned that this landfill originally was approved sometime in the year 2000. Is that right? Were there actual councillors elected in that time? when this original application was approved.